You are listening to International Open Podcast. This is the official podcast of International Open Magazine. Please head over to internationalopenmagazine.com to see the show notes size of the podcast, articles and more information. Issue 4. I'm here in Austria from Vienna, and I'm talking with Derek Breen from United States, in United States actually. Derek, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Horst, in Vienna?
Very good. I'm very glad to see you. Okay, and for technical buffs, we're using Google Hangout on air. I think this is the first time we're successfully using that. Is that right?
It is. And what's ironic is I'm the one in a basement, but you're the one that looks like you're in a basement with no light.
Ah, that's because I did not turn the light on. Right. Looks also stupid.
Now you look like you're in the witness protection program.
Yeah. I'm a bit too lazy to go now make the light.
Well, of course it's evening. It's evening there, and it's morning here.
Ah, that's okay. Okay. Yes. Well, Derek, a lot of things happened. Last time I heard from you was podcast issue 3, where you were interviewed in Moscow by. Can you say his name again? I forgot.
Yeah, by Sergey, this incredible historian.
Historian, yeah. Sports historian.
Uber nerd on many fronts, sports and books and movies. I was so disappointed. I really wanted to talk to him about movies.
Yeah.
But we only had one evening to do podcasting together. We thought we were going to sneak in another one, but it will have to wait until I return to Russia next month.
So, but you plan to have more podcasts with him?
Definitely. I'll be in Russia. Well, I'll be in Moscow, I think, for the whole month of April. So my hope is that maybe we'll do a few podcasts while there and pull some other fascinating people into those conversations. Do a true podcast in a restaurant. We're trying to find a restaurant that where the music isn't too loud.
Yeah, that's actually a big problem because with the rights of the music with the so you need either music that is so internationally unknown that you never will get problem or no music at all. Both is hard to find.
Exactly. Well, I think there were a couple of Georgian restaurants that were really fantastic and only played local Georgian music.
Okay.
So I don't think the rights clearance would be a problem because I don't imagine that Google has indexed Georgian folk music yet, but you
underestimate.
But they're pretty small, so yeah. Hopefully we'll find the right place.
Okay, so let's talk about you. You was in Moscow how long now? For how many months?
I was in Moscow for about 3 weeks, and I'm trying to train myself to say Moscow. Because in the U.S. we say Moscow, cow, and that's so far away from how they say it. I should say Moskva. But my Russian is still almost as minuscule as my German.
You're learning Russian?
I am. I'm using Duolingo, and I found a really great app for learning the Cyrillic alphabet that I'm using on my iPad. So between the two, I was doing well my first week in Russia, doing it every day, like an hour a day. But then my schedule just got kind of crazy, so I've gotten out of the habit, and I need to get back. Hopefully, the next few weeks while I'm in Arizona, I'll be brushing up on. So my hope is to at least be able to read the whole alphabet by the time I go back, because it's very hard to navigate subways there in particular without at least being able to read the name of the station.
You sent me a YouTube video where you were in English talking also about this Anne Frank stuff a bit, I think. And is this some kind of Russian educational program? I did not get the Russian part of it.
It is. It was meant to be the pilot episode for a new series called School of the Future.
So you're back to TV producing now.
Well, that was part of the attraction for going back to Moscow. Yeah. They have this, it's an education, they call it internet education television or educational internet television, something like that. They right now it's all broadcast through the internet, but people are watching it on their TV using smart TVs.
Okay.
And it's broadcast to all the schools in Moscow. And Moscow is so huge in terms of population that it's sort of like broadcasting across an entire country.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a massive audience. And apparently the show that I did for them the last time that I was there was one of the highest rated that they've had.
Okay.
Because they only started broadcasting in September. So they were really anxious to get me back in the studio.
But I did not fully understood. You was originally talking in English. You presenting Scratch and design things. And then they dubbed you live? Or was
no, they're going to dub post-production.
Okay.
So they want to produce educational shows for an international audience.
Okay.
So part of the attraction of getting me is having the book, of course, the reputation of the book, and then also being able to reach an English-speaking audience
that wouldn't
be available. And then it's easier for them to just dub me in Russian. They were considering doing subtitles, but it really doesn't work when you're presenting visual information like Scratch tutorials. So we've started fishing around for somebody that has a similar vocal style to me, like similar energy, and actually found someone that I think will be really good for doing it. And we're going to explore, mess around with that a bit more when I'm back in Moscow.
And can you reveal this information? You now hired in Russia to do these educational videos by the Republic of Russia, or is this a private organization?
Technically, no.
Yep.
Technically, I haven't been hired. There's all this bureaucracy around paying people from outside of Russia, especially because it's government funded. It's actually run by the school district, the Minister of Education for Moscow. So I was on another program while I was there that was a live panel discussion, which I haven't shared yet because that one is me speaking in English, them speaking in Russian. I can't see them. They can see me, but you can't see my translator. And it's really kind of rough. It's an hour long, and I don't know what interest there is for that outside of Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing that happened with that is many of the higher ups really got into some of the things that I brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And they are exploring ways to kind of bring my skills to a wider audience in Moscow. But I'm not sure yet whether that means having a dedicated series or doing more school visits like I've been doing. One of the things that I'm really excited about that looks like it's going to happen pretty quickly is creating a creative computing lab in their flagship school in Moscow. So they keep referring to it as Scratch Lab because everything I've done has been about Scratch, but really hopefully emphasizing all the creative uses of technology. And we're trying to get that launched in time to do Scratch Day, which would be like the first or second week of May. And a big part of that initiative would be getting the creative computing curriculum guide translated into Russian. It's not available in Russian yet. So that's something that I've set for them as a big priority. And even if the center doesn't happen, but if we got the guide that was developed at Harvard to be translated into Russian, that would be huge because of the massive population that would then be available to. The guide is completely Creative Commons share alike licensed. So
So this is really an open educational resource, what you're doing.
There. Yeah, and it's really, I think I have it, I thought I had it right here. It's close to 100 pages, and it's even presented in a remixable format, in PowerPoint format, so that anybody with access to either PowerPoint or Google Slides or any other presentation software can remix it any way that they want and use the parts that work best for their class. It's pretty great.
I think this is a feature that very few educational material actually care about, that you as a teacher have to adapt it. So a lot of educational software material is, take it, we have the perfect form, and this is a block, and you can use it, and you are not allowed to touch it or remix it.
I remixed it myself a year ago for a Scratch camp curriculum that I designed, and I'll be using it extensively again this year because they've asked me to develop a second week of Scratch game design for them.
Did you have had the opportunity to get an impression about the school situation in Russia? How is the computer lab situation, or were you only concerned with some very elite schools, so where all the money is concentrated? Or was it more like there's a national campaign to improve computer science? Did you get any information about the situation there?
I visited two schools this time, of sort of official visits with the film crew and everything. There's some video on YouTube of me at two of the schools, and I'm hoping that we have a more extended version of that video, because at both schools, my goal was to empower the kids to teach as much as possible. So if you added up the minutes of the two Scratch workshops, one was with 8-year-olds, and one was with more like 14 to 16-year-olds. And in both cases, I would say at least 70% of the time I had kids teaching. And I'm proud of that, because in both situations, none of the kids had extensive experience with Scratch, and most kids were using it for the first time. So it was really demonstrating this methodology that I've been developing of empowering kids to teach each other as they're discovering something, rather than them having to be fed knowledge and then digested and then come back. Like, I see it as a really dynamic constructionist process, so I'm really proud of that. But I definitely had the sense that I was seeing elite schools. Even one of the schools was in a pretty depressed neighborhood, but it was clearly they had MacBook Pros.
Okay.
And like, that says it all right there. In fact, all three schools, all the laptops were Apple laptops. And in none of the schools did I see desktop computer labs. They seem to rely more on laptops.
Okay, that's interesting. So only laptop classes, but no traditional computer lab.
Yeah, but that might be remembered wrong. I'm pretty sure, though, I got pretty extensive tours of all three schools, and so I'm sure that they would have shown me a dedicated computer lab if they had one. The colleges are more mixed, PC and Mac. And now that I'm thinking of it, maybe the high school did have a PC lab, but I'm just not remembering clearly.
Okay, I'm still here.
Sure, but I'm sorry to say, no Linux anywhere.
Linux is no topic in all these talks.
No, it really, you would expect it to be huge in Moscow, but at least in the places where I was, pretty much everybody was on PCs or Macs, and I think more Apple than PC, maybe even more so than I've come to expect in the US. I think Apple has a really deep penetration, at least in Moscow.
So we Westerners have also to teach those Russians anti-Americanism.
They need more Linda Lucas, clearly. They all need to read Hello Ruby.
Okay.
I love the way that, have you read the book yet or flipped through it?
No, from Linda, talking about Linda's book, Hello Ruby.
Yeah.
No, not actually.
I was just reviewing some parts of it because I sent her an email earlier today about doing an open licensing of her characters and illustrations to be used in Scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like already the Cartoon Network and PBS Kids.
Sorry, please clarify that. You proposed Linda to open license her artwork. She did not do that.
I didn't propose that directly. I was more suggesting that she create a shared open Scratch project that's remixable with all of her characters and backgrounds and things from the book, the way that Cartoon Network and PBS Kids have started to do with their licensed properties. So they've made their characters and scenes and stuff available to kids to make their own animation and stories, which I think is really great. And I'm hoping that Linda considers it. And I even offered to donate some of my time to help make that happen if that's helpful.
Are we talking now about the same project? I think there's some American national computer program where big companies like Disney are participating, and they have these programming tours with the Star Wars robots and
well, that's like that. Most of that stuff is through Google CS and Hour of Code, code.org.
Code.org. I think code.org can that be.
And those are, for the most part, very closed projects. They're also not
license.
And you can't, they're not Scratch. They actually use Google Blockly.
Mm-hmm,
and
they're,
I think it's great that kids are learning to code any way they can.
Mm-hmm.
But I really prefer Scratch because in Scratch there's the possibility of kids going in many different directions. It's open-ended, whereas most of those Hour of Code Blockly lessons are very linear.
One way in.
And there's no way to remix projects, at least from what I saw when I was doing Hour of Code in Ireland.
I don't have to tell that to you, but for our audience, I have to do this rant now.
Yeah.
I think it's also not doing a very good thing to the world or the audience in general if those companies doing projecting their brand, their intellectual property right regulated brands into the minds of the little kids. Because if the little kid then want to make a own painting or a movie or a computer game with these Star Wars characters, in effect it can't because this protected material. It's not free licensed artwork.
Yeah, I agree at least half with what you're saying. I think the advantage of using licensed characters is that it's a hook. It's a hook to get some kids that might not otherwise be involved, but I definitely prefer the way that Cartoon Network and PBS and some other companies are starting to open up their characters and allow kids to do that. Ironically, I just read an article a few weeks ago that that people are starting to go after children, or at least go after Scratch community for illegally using music in Scratch projects.
Yeah, there was a thing making the round. It's also in our German podcast. But that's what was you said to me as you was in Europe before, that Scratch is the YouTube for little kids where they can produce and publish their own stuff. So they have to start to getting the same problems that YouTube users already have.
Exactly.
Okay, but back to your previous, you said Cartoon Network is allowing their characters to be used for programming?
Yeah, we can link to them in the show notes too. They've licensed several of their, let me make sure I have it right. What Cartoon Network did is they created three Scratch projects for Hour of Code using three different sets of characters and locations from their cartoons. And the kids can not only follow their tutorial, but they can also pretty much do anything they want in Scratch using those characters, which is pretty cool.
The one thing is doing that inside Scratch, but as far as I understand, Scratch has all the material, also the artwork in Scratch is free licensed, so Creative Commons license. You can really publish that. And they really gifted away their intellectual property, their cartoons, to a free license.
You're half right. So the first thing you said is totally true. All of the images and sounds in the library built into Scratch are freely available to use. What Cartoon Network did is they created standalone Scratch projects.
Mm-hmm.
So all of their assets are only available in those projects initially.
Okay.
They're not in Scratch itself. Like if they're not in the Scratch library.
Yeah, yeah.
But because kids can remix those projects as many times as they want, in fact, they can use all of those assets any way they choose within Scratch.
I fully understand the technical way.
Yeah,
but
I
wonder about the legal situation. But as soon as you do something in Scratch, don't you implicit free license this material?
No. It's only licensed for use on the Scratch website. So as soon as
really open license.
If some kid makes a picture and exports it as a PNG or a GIF, That is not licensed. That license is not necessarily covered. So of course it's a gray area, but I don't want to put out the wrong message. They definitely have not open sourced their intellectual property. They're just allowing kids to work with it. And actually Lucas did that several years ago where he allowed people to remix or reuse assets from Star Wars, but only on the Star Wars website. They could only be published. And so it was a real like half step.
I don't have to speak out on how many levels I think this is wrong to
end. Yeah. I certainly know where you stand. For me, what's exciting to me, I want to encourage other companies to at least do this half step, because it's allowing kids to manipulate the media that they are already addicted to. And of course, I would prefer them to design their own characters, but I think it's very powerful for kids to be able to manipulate characters and work with them the same way that maybe they're using like a Lego Star Wars kit or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I actually had a little touch of government myself in Austria. I was on a digital champion meeting where like a dozen organizations were invited who all do some computer teaching. And also one guy from the European Union was there. And then I, of course, everyone proposed his project, and I was the only one talking about free licenses. And of course, also said, well, I suspect that a lot of you guys are only projecting their brains. And then trying to get their brains anchored in the education material. But the brains tainted with all the restrictions. Do I still speak clearly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is what happened in a worldwide level here. But, yeah.
We definitely have a long ways to go. I really enjoyed the article that you shared yesterday. I think it was yesterday, about open education.
So this is an international open magazine, the newest article from a Brazil guy, I think. Brazilian guy, yeah. About open education resources, yeah. Yeah. Just a little bit, we're talking about how to involve kids into computer science, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I'm from the not RT direction. I'm from the coding fraction, so I think it's enough to play in text mode in a monochrome screen. And I did today.
And actually, that, of course, is not my method. I want vector graphics.
Derek is more from the RT side, sitting with his MacBook Air in Parisian cafes.
That's right.
Yeah, but I think there are many ways how you can get kids involved into computing and into computical thinking.
Of course.
And what I learn more and more, that I do that, you don't need always 3D graphics to for the kids to have fun. I'm always very amazed if they learn a bit line of Python. So I'm, of course, a Python instructor. And they start making a program where a jar move around a text screen. They are so fascinated. I don't have to teach anymore. I just let them play around with them until they become ready for the next lesson. And yeah, it's kids have the fantasy. You don't have to, they don't need a Star Wars universe just to get them behind a computer screen. They already are behind a computer screen. So,
well, this is why I think you're going to love, you need to go out and buy Linda Lucas's Hello Ruby right now, because it's like it's a book written for you. If you had children, Horst, this is the book you would want them to read when they're 5 or 6. Yep. It even has, like, Tux is a character, and the Mozilla Fox is a character, and, like, it's really cool. But it also has an Apple character, like, so it's really
the evil guy.
not evil. What I like about it is that she explores the pluses and the minuses of the whole sort of stratosphere in such a creative way.
Okay.
So it talks about the Apple, and I can't remember. It's weird. I can't remember what that character even. Can't remember that character per se. But the Apple is basically like more orderly and clean and nice, whereas the little Android guy is really crazy and all over the place, but open and friendly. Did you watch her TED Talk?
Yes, I'm very jealous that she has a TED Talk now. I think it was
anybody can get a TED Talk.
Yeah,
okay. They're doing it everywhere. I've been to a few of them now.
But you have not your own TED Talk. It's the new thing, like having a homepage or a Facebook page. You have
honestly,
you have no TED
Talk. I suspect I will do one someday, and I don't want to ruin my chances. But I'm a little bit burned out on TED Talks.
Okay, I see.
Particularly, I've found I really don't like going to TED because, like, the last one I went to, I was only there for half a day, and a friend of mine was the final presenter. He was awesome. I actually hadn't seen him in many years. This was in Virginia. This great guy, Bernard, man, I'm forgetting his full last name, Bernard H. But okay. We'll link to it in the show notes because he did this really incredible talk.
Derek, I absolutely loved the word we Hankins. In show notes.
Bernard Hankins.
Okay.
I think that's how I
and
say
what,
his last
but
name.
What was the problem with the TED Talk? Was it too exhausting to be overexcited by exciting people all day? Or what?
Well, first of all, I was not overexcited by most of the speakers.
Ah, okay. So we only see the good TED Talks in real life.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, not to imply there weren't other good talks. There were a few very good talks that I saw. My problem is the saturation point. And I'm sure this varies a lot from location to location and talk to talk. Maybe when it's in Long Beach, the big TED Talk, maybe they have a lot more breathing room between speakers. But when you have four or five people doing 16 to 20 minute talks back to back, and then a break for lunch, and then four or five more, it's too many ideas. And there's not a lot of time. I'd really like to see them build in some discussion time.
So it's more like
really engaging people in exploring the ideas.
So it's not a typical conference setting where the real action happens between the talks and on the floor. So it's only the talks and you have no time between?
Well, especially TEDx, because TEDx is one day. It all has to happen in one day. It's broken up by lunch. Maybe there's a dinner afterwards. But it's like, imagine a huge conference, or not huge, it's usually 100 or a couple hundred people. Imagine the Scratch conference with no workshops and no posters, talks.
One talk session.
On one stage. It really, in some ways, you get the best and the worst, I think, conferences. And you and I have gone to a lot of conferences over the past year. So we've seen some of the best and some of the worst.
So we will make our own TED, multi-TED.
But I think what's really valuable about TED is that it gives people all over the world a voice and a platform. So I really like the democracy that anybody that does a TEDx talk is included in the big TED stratosphere. Like Linda Lucas, she didn't do a talk in California. She did it, I don't remember, do you remember where that TEDx was?
No.
It was somewhere, it was definitely not in the U.S., But she's already reached hundreds of thousands of people because of the TED brand. So I like that it has that possibility. But
it's a marketing multiplier.
Yeah, it does also feel diluted. So I like the conferences I'm doing now. I'm doing another one in Dublin in 3 weeks.
But you're not doing a TED conference.
I haven't done a TED yet.
Educational conference.
I spoke to someone about doing a TED in New Bedford, Massachusetts, where I used to live. That's where I lived when I was going to college, and I was quite excited about the idea of doing a talk there because I have a lot of friends and ties to the community. I used to do a television show in New Bedford, and I did a lot of theater there, so I thought it would be cool. But that was before I started my international travels, and in fact I think I was in Russia maybe when that happened, or Ireland. I was out of the country, so
I must keep you here for our international audience. If you want to host Derek, please do so. He's maybe soon in a country near you, in a city near you, looking for a host. And as I can talk from my own experience, it's very enriching to host Derek.
If you're ever going to Amsterdam or many of these other cities, there have been so many people that have been kind hosts to me. But surely the kindest, most generous host is yours truly. Because how many times have I stayed in your apartment now? Like, I think three.
But the cool thing is that Derek invited me to Rome, where we had a great Make a Rome Fair experience. So I can really honestly say, host Derek. This is very, really a cool thing to do. And he's your poster homeless artist living in Parisian cafes. So we need a home.
I've been homeless since June 1st. I was just talking to my sister about this. So yeah, I'm staying at my sister's house right now. And then I go to Arizona for 2 weeks because my parents and an aunt both have houses there, and I don't have to drive because I also haven't had a car in a year. So it's pretty great.
Just a little.
Of course. I've been doing a lot of talking. So if you were going to do a TED talk, I probably know the answer, but for our audience, what would you most want to talk to people about if you had 17 minutes in an international audience?
I would maybe use 14 minutes with silence just for show, because there's too much noise already, and then put my message in a 3-minute lightning talk, because I think if you can't say it in 3 minutes, then you should maybe shut up and redo your talk.
That's a really important point too, that most people try to fill all that time. Yeah. Some of the best talks are the ones that are 10 minutes or less.
Yeah, also in conferences, I always enjoy the lightning talk sessions where you only have 5 minutes and they're very pedantic about this.
And at the Scratch conference, you only get 3.
Yeah, 3. This is very, it's a bit extreme, but it's.
I think it's extreme too, but or maybe it's 5. Is it 5?
It was 5.
I guess it's 5.
No,
you're
usually 5. But you're right, there's 3 minutes because every speaker needs 2 minutes for his laptop. It doesn't work. Yeah. But Derek, I want to say something.
Please.
Just a very short thing. I was in the Hamburg Chaos Communication Conference, that thing in December.
And yeah. I can. Episode 2.
Yes, episode 2 of this podcast. Please listen. I'm still writing the report of it. It's 1 month ago, but I'm still not finished writing the article about it. I hopefully will do soon. But there was a lightning talk, and on this lightning talk, I met the next possible Linda Lucas. It was also a very small woman, young woman, and she was saying she will write a book about Python, and it will all be, wait for it, Creative Commons share alike licenses, including the artwork. And
that's awesome.
This is the cool thing about lightning talks. Later, I ran to her like a crazy groupie and said, yes, I will help you. Blah, 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 blah. And I never managed to even write her an email because I wanted to do the article first. So, but there's stuff, things happening. And
Where is she from?
Germany. I hope I find her email address again. I know I wrote the email address, and but what I want to say with that is go to a Hamburg Chaos Communication Conference. This is where very cool stuff happens. I think you have seen the pictures or heard my last podcast.
Yeah.
And so Derek, please, next year you must be there. I will care for
everything.
I totally
want to go. I was supposed to go this year.
For our audience, if your international audience, that's very okay. It was in English anyway. So it's in Germany, and then some talks are in German, but they are dubbed in English. So, but as an international, you're very welcome there, and we'll have a great time. It's really the biggest hacker meeting in Europe. Very, very cool thing. Cool people, cool projects. Go there. I normally don't make advertisement for German conferences, but for this, I have to do because I was so fascinated.
If you can make it to Dublin the last weekend of February, the CESI conference, which is the Computer Educators Society.
You're talking 2016. This is in 4
weeks?
Yes,
in 3 weeks.
Ooh, yeah.
So I'll be presenting there. I'm not sure exactly what I'm presenting, whether it's a talk or a workshop or both. I offered to do both, but I think I'm doing a keynote there, and there's a teach meet the night before. So it's sort of like, it's only a 1-day conference, but the teach meet makes it feel like a 2-day. So it's a great format where it's lightning talks, but it's ranked who gets to go up. They have a wheel that they spin, and I've been to a few of them and really enjoyed them. You went to one or two of them in Amsterdam, didn't you? At the VOG? They did these teach-meets.
Yes, they were very cool.
With Digital Maverick.
I must say they were also together with a party, so
yeah, there was lots of beer.
I have a fuzzy memory about it, but I remember having a great time.
Yeah, people teased me because I was sprawled out on the floor at one of them with a big grolsch in my hand, like, and it was not my first grolsch of the evening.
So that was fun. To cover it up, at the moment you are in USA,
and I'm in the USA until the end of February. Actually, I'll fly.
And then you go to Ireland.
I think I have to fly to Amsterdam because I'm applying for a work visa to go back to Russia, and it is really complicated, and they can't get me my invitation in time for me to get it processed in the U.S. So this will be the third time in 4 months that I've been going through a visa application process. Of the U.S. and you know a bit about this.
I wanted to ask about, didn't nobody in Russia or from the government side propose you to maybe get married and so to ease up the whole immigration process?
I'm not opposed to that idea.
So the KGB also did not offer you a bureaucracy fixing wife?
Not yet, although I really had this Soviet dinner experience where I was brought to this really exclusive restaurant in Moscow called, I think it's the Writer's Room or the Writer's Club. It's where the Soviet writers and artists used to go. And it's really exclusive. Like, you have the feeling that you have to put on a dinner jacket.
Okay, yeah.
And we were literally escorted in by this television personality and guy, this really great guy, Dmitry, who does the weather every morning in Moscow on TV. Okay. He has to get up at like 4 a.m, but he's involved with the educational TV station. And he was really excited about some of the stuff I was doing there. And then I got to see his documentary, this great documentary, which we'll link to, about this pioneer Russian pilot.
Okay.
I think the grandfather of his wife. Mm-hmm. So like his grandfather-in-law or something like that. But they brought me in, and I sat down, and they kept telling me, like, who's that? Oh, you don't know who that is at the other table, but if you did, you'd be so excited to be here. It was like celebrities and officials, and I drank more vodka than I have in my entire life. Like,
good thing that you trained as a sailor.
We went through 2 bottles of vodka, like really high quality vodka, phenomenal food. It would be a really interesting place to do a podcast, but we'll never be able to do a podcast there. Way too formal. But
so it was mixing with the Russian art elite.
Yeah, it was really like they were wining and dining me, and I thought they were going to be offering me a more permanent job that night, but the politics of Moscow make it really hard for them to actually hire people from outside of Russia. So right now it's more of just sort of a collaboration versus job. There's kind of a lot of that there.
But what it was not specific because you was American. It was any non-Russian nationality would have this problem to be hired.
I think it was partially being American.
Oh, so you can always try to find a European wife and then become European.
Yeah, I really do. I do think if it was was someone from Ireland or a country that has better relations,
then it would be easier.
Then it might be easier. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of loaded because it's about educating kids. And so if you think about it, that would be one of the hardest things to get into in a country that has concerns about outside influences.
Yep.
In fact, speaking of which, I was supposed to be going to Jordan in the first week of March with SAP to be involved with a new coding initiative that they want to get going there. And they canceled my participation because of security concerns. And I also thought that there might be some issues in the Middle East having people come from other countries, in America in particular, and teaching young kids anything.
It's the political equivalent of traveling the world with a big kick me or capture me or ransom me sign.
Yeah. So it's funny. I think many countries want me to come and kind of do what I do, go into schools and do these fun demonstrations and dance with the kids and have them make animated turtles and video games.
Yeah.
But then they want me to leave. They don't want me to stay. So I'm
victim of Americans' image of the world.
I've now been to Russia twice just since October, and I think I spent about 4 weeks total there in the past 3 months, and I'm about to go back for a month and a half, so I'm sure I'm on many lists, both in the U.S. and in Russia at this point, just based on visa applications, if nothing else.
Please tell me, at least as you returned to America at the airport, you get winked aside because there's a Russian stamp in your passport.
It never happens. Never happens.
Sad.
I think I just have one of those faces where I couldn't less Arab. And of course, that's the demographic that they're most concerned about at airports. And in particular, you know, I always fly back into Boston. Or New York, or both. Usually I have a connecting flight, so I go Moscow to New York and then to Boston. And of course, the two most security-conscious airports in the world are probably New York and Boston. You know, the 9/11, you know, the flights flew out of Boston and, of course, New York. So I do always think about that. But it never ceases to amaze me. Every time I pass through customs with a wave or a nod, I just feel like... How is this possible? I could have anything. I could have raw nuts in my bag, which apparently is worse than anthrax. I threw away all my snacks and stuff when I left the plane, and I could have kept them. They wouldn't have even known. I could have had all those lovely snacks from Russia. So, Horst, a bit more about what's going on with you in Vienna. You're teaching. Are there some other projects on the horizon?
No, I'm still self-employed and doing my teaching children Python stuff, and I'm fine. I have no TED talk yet, but so my biggest problem at the moment is finding the time to write about these amazing conferences that I visited, like the Chaos Communication Camp in end of December. And so if you're interested in International Open Magazine or International Open Podcast, dear audience, please send me either links to stories you find interesting, so everything about openness or open education. And if you can, please write an article, or if you have a blog post, send it to me. I will publish it in Open International Magazine.
I'm definitely planning to write something soon about Moscow. And,
cool.
And
Derek, hopefully, if you find guys like Dimitri, do recruiting, tell them, hey, don't you want to publish?
Oh, I have been. I've definitely been promoting a bit in Russia, and I'll be able to do it in a more dedicated way when I'm back there. Are there any plans to put out a print edition in 2016?
Well, plans, yes, but let's be realistic. So I'm at the moment at a interval of publishing about one article a month. That is even low for my standards. And this is huge work. I don't even write them myself. I just ask other people, can I get this article under free license? This is my work I actually do. And the next step toward print will be to have one button where you get an EPUB or a printout version. At the moment, it's only really good for looking on a big screen on TV. And I really want an EPUB version so that you can download it and read it on your e-reader, or that you can download it and print it out. So that will be the next thing for International Open Magazine.
That sounds like a good way to go.
It's a technical issue. I have to solve that with my friends. So because I want to do it once, the markdown files, and then have buttons who auto-format that. I don't want to by hand formatted, of course. And I think as soon as we have a print and EPUB version, then it's actually a good idea to print out and make a bundle of the such and such articles.
Yeah, and in the meantime, people can use a service like Instapaper, which I've been using for a few years, where you just have a bookmarklet in Chrome or whatever, or Firefox, and you can click. So you just go to the web page that has the article, you click the Instapaper button, and then it compiles its own journal. And I have it set up so that it sends me a weekly digest right to my Kindle.
And then you can read it if you're on the plane offline or
Yeah,
so.
so I love it. It's great. Anytime I find longer articles, because I don't really like reading articles more than 500 words or so online, then I have it. And yeah, then I haven't bought magazines in years. Now I just know that I have my little electronic journal that I can
That's it.
take with me.
Can I also make a request here public for our audience?
Oh yeah.
I'm actually a bit with my workload. I realized that I cannot handle all the social media things that I wish to do, like having a Twitter account. I can handle that, but having a Facebook person who just makes an article in Facebook, a posting on Facebook, if a new article is out in International Open Magazine. You understand? Yeah, and I understand that I'm too slow for that, and I'm not. It costs me too much energy, and so and because there's an official Facebook page, then there's a Facebook group, and then you should also promote it to people on Facebook who would love to reshare that. So I would need an Facebook guy or Facebook girl who just post the things from the magazine to Facebook and try to spread the word. You
And
understand me?
maybe the person could simultaneously do LinkedIn too, because I think more and
Yes.
more people are using LinkedIn.
So if someone is good in one social network and would take the workload of just promoting International Magazine there and trying to get people in connection and get people to share their links or make their stories, I would really appreciate help in this direction.
Maybe you could get an intern.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what people do? You go to the university or even go to the hacker space and put up a little note that's just because it you know what? It's the easiest thing in the world for people younger than us to do regularly. Like they're doing it 50 times a day. Even my niece, who's 9 years old,
Can we recruit
is
your niece, maybe?
probably there might be some difficulty there, particularly with Facebook. But yeah, I'm actually going to be paying my cousin to handle some of that for me because I, with the book, and now I have two more books coming out in March, and so I'm not, it's not like I'm famous or anything, and it's not like I make a ton of money, but I spend many hours most days just dealing with email, Facebook, and Twitter tied to promotion. You know, just scratch, just staying on top of that stuff. And I enjoy doing some of it, but I can't do as much as I have been, especially as I take on bigger projects like the Anne Frank Museum project, which I'm hoping is going to
So
be
and
moving
this
forward
money
soon.
spent in your cousin to handle some of the social media workload, you think this is that really helps you that someone is caring for your social media activities because it would eat away time that you need to do other things.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is just psychological, and fortunately, I have a cousin who's great and reliable and needs some extra work. So my plan is to just put some money in a bank account, and she'll name a fair rate, and she'll be totally self-regulating. Because otherwise, you always hear this: it takes more time to manage an assistant than the benefit of having an assistant. Like so many people I know would take on interns, but their concern is that they would spend so much time just describing what needs to be done that they'd be like, oh, I could have done it in that time.
And I have problems with the word intern. Is an intern someone who is not paid?
Well, in the US, by law, you have to pay interns. So they're
Now
paid, but a low wage.
low wage. The problem is for International Open Magazine, I do not make any money out of it, so I have
Of course.
no incentive to pay someone to do it.
I think there is a lot of incentive for younger people just to get the credit of being, a social media marketer or whatever title And you're really good about letting people choose their own titles.
So if someone is hearing this who is young and needs
a title, the official art director of International Open Magazine.
Exactly. I hope you will have that meanwhile on your business card.
Not yet. I don't even make enough from International Open Magazine to pay for a business card.
So we should conclude here that we actually, none of us makes any money out of it.
Yeah.
I think I have Google Ads running, but also they are not bringing any money.
Sure. And of course it's not about that. But I did also want to mention, I mentioned the conference in February. I will also be going, in Dublin. Yeah. I'll be going to another conference and presenting in Moscow in April. And that one is an international education conference with several thousand people.
Well,
so for people that aren't too far away from Moscow, like within a 2 or 3 hour flight, it might be worth considering. And I don't know if they've finished building the website for that conference yet. But it might be worth exploring, especially if they have live translation available like they did for the last conference. And I'll be keynoting there and hopefully also doing a masterclass, and would love to have some more people joining from Europe. In fact, I put forward Linda Lucas's name as a possible keynote person. I don't know if she's available. She's probably too famous now to do that kind of stuff. But if she needs a break from TED, and it would be a much bigger audience live. Mm. But I can't speak highly enough about the experience I had my first time in Moscow participating. And I'd be happy to. That's what I need to write. I think I need to really write an article of just about going to Russia and speaking and going into schools and getting a much better sense of the people than what my media portrays, especially as I just read another article this morning from the New York Times.
Really?
Basically blaming Russia for Syria stalling the peace talks.
You wrote an article for
New York? No, read.
Read.
Oh, okay. I think it was the New York Times or the Washington Post, but it was about the stalled peace talks.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't place all the blame on Russia, but they definitely placed some of the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically said that Russians are continuing to bomb, it makes it difficult for the peace talks to move forward. And whether that's true or not, I'm not debating that. But it just means that's the kind of thing in mainstream press that is straining relations between the U.S. and Russia as we speak.
Well, I will not compromise your private life here on public.
Derek, oh, please do.
No,
why stop now?
I spent some very cool hours with Derek, and I can say one of the advantages of hosting Derek is that he will tell a lot of stories about the people he meets during his travels. And my private opinion is, Derek, that if you would write a book just about your life and travel, and also like a Woody Allen episode of strange characters in strange countries doing strange things to you, like this Louis C.K.
Louis C.K.
So you would make a bestseller because you travel the world meeting people. That's very fun. Okay.
I think we'll need some new podcast episodes at least. I've definitely met some more interesting people in Moscow. And guess where I'm going in March?
Where?
So I think I'm doing another workshop in Paris with Cloud from the Scratch Conference in Amsterdam. And then I'll be back in Amsterdam for a bit and in Ireland and Naples to do some research at Pompeii and doing hopefully a workshop for Angela.
Wow, Angela, okay.
Who you met at the Maker Fair.
Oh, the young Angela, okay.
Young Angela, also Agnese. The timing is tricky. Because of this visa process, I don't know how long I'll get to spend in Italy. But then I'm not flying to Moscow on March 10th. I'm actually flying to Vladivostok.
Wow. This is now, at the other end of Russia.
I had no idea where that was. You do, because you're better educated than I am.
I think this is on the Pacific coast.
Yeah, it's literally, it's actually east of China.
Yeah.
If you look at the map, it's, although there is a little part of China that's further east.
And then you travel from Vladivostok to Moscow?
Yeah, because this really cool project that I'm getting involved with called School of the Future. It's a new school, a new secondary school being built literally on the grounds of Moscow State University. They are designing this state-of-the-art 21st century boarding school that's going to bring students from all over the Russian Federation to Moscow for 4 years. And what excites me the most about the project is one of their commitments is to make sure most of those kids go back to their community, that they don't stay in Moscow and become startup geeks, but that they actually keep close ties with their community while they're in Moscow.
So a centralized location to foster decentralized things.
And
let's see how
they're really steeped in design thinking. It's going to be a non-traditional curriculum, all project-based, interdisciplinary, like really cool. And they've started doing these camps. They did one last summer, and they're doing another one in March. And I'm going to be participating in this camp, which will be in Vladivostok. So rather than having everything centralized in Moscow, they're going to the furthest reaches of the Federation and getting kids from all over the region to come. In some ways, it's part of the screening process for admittance to the school. It's also an opportunity just to teach some of these skills to kids who might not make the final cut and get to Moscow. But it's a 2-week project-based camp where they're identifying like 24 problems in the local community in Vladivostok. And there'll be small groups of kids, like 20 or so, that will be working for 2 weeks on that one problem with different experts. So I'll be working with them on design, and I'm teamed up with a scientist, and they'll be doing real world, sort of like a 2-week hackathon almost, but overnight, it's a camp. So I'm really excited about that. And it means this will be my first time in Asia, because that's far Asia, since I was in the Navy in 91. So it's the first time that I'll be bringing Scratch to Asia. And what I may try to do is to spend some time in China and or Japan, because I'll be right there. In fact, I'll be closer to North Korea than almost anyone else can be without being in North Korea. Going to all the hot spots. That reminds me, the one other thing I wanted to ask you about is the last time we were together, you were putting some serious consideration into doing like an exchange camp with Ireland.
Yes, with Steve. Thanks for I'm in contact with him. I just have to work on the legal situation here, because it's not easy to get rich Austrian kids to transport them somewhere overseas. So there's a bit of responsibility involved, and I have to check that out.
I think you should go to Dublin for a weekend. And you should do it while the SESI conference is happening, because Yuk will be there from Amsterdam and a bunch of people that you met from Ireland. It would be a really cool time to spend a couple of days there.
But this is let's discuss that in private, not in the
But I guess I just wanted to close on that note, because what's been so exciting over the past, I guess, 6 months since August is
we met in Amsterdam last year, yes, August.
Yeah. Finding that when you go to cities and you're going there sort of with your passion, like our shared passion for educational technology, going to conferences, meeting people, that the world gets small really fast, and you quickly find the people that think like you do. And I think it's still a pretty big minority Well, that's kind of an oxymoron. It's a minority of us.
The global elite.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that there are so many of us thinking about educational technology mm-hmm. beyond our own city, much less our own country. Mm-hmm. So it's been really cool to see these alliances forming all over. And so like you and Steve Holmes is just one example yeah. of that. Me and Uke in Amsterdam. And while I was in Amsterdam also, I should mention, we had a really fun after conference. So Uke invited a bunch of people who were at the Scratch conference in August to come back to Amsterdam, people who lived in the area. Mm-hmm. And I think he had maybe 7 or 8 people for a full day at his office. And they spent more than half the day contributing to the Scratch Wiki mm-hmm. in Dutch. Yep. So it was a really cool project-based time together. And one of them brought a child. We did some Scratch together. Mm. And then our Scratch project, we shared it. And we had instructions in both English and Dutch. And then that was linked to from the wiki. So it's really fun just to see people coming together and doing things that reach this wider world audience. Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
I want to close this podcast. Sadly, I have to go soon.
I do too.
With an appel, is that the word?
What is it?
An appel. I ask the audience. I ask the audience a favor.
Oh, appeal.
Thank you. Appeal, host appealing now. Please, dear audience, if you happen to meet interesting people or interesting technology, or if you are on a cool conference and there's exciting stuff happen, please blog about it, write and report, send it to International Open Magazine, either to me, Horst Jens, or to Derek. Or if you have a smartphone in your hands, go to the interesting people and interview them. Ask them about their project and send us the audio file so that we can make a podcast out of it.
Yeah, I'd love to see this podcast continue to grow and, yep. and have more voices.
So it really has started to be me and Derek. So it's open for everyone. And the whole point is it has to be free license. That's what I will make sure about it. So there's mm-hmm. So whatever is in International Open Magazine, you can work and do your own thing with it. It's all Creative Commons share like.
If you're like Sergey in Moscow and you've been listening to podcasts and have been really wanting to create your own podcast, please feel free to create an episode of International Open Podcast and then use that as your to grow into making your own podcast. If you're not quite ready to commit to doing a weekly or monthly podcast, just do one episode with us.
Donate us one episode, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's somehow about open, I'm very happy.
Yeah, and please include local beer if possible. We couldn't do it this time because of the time difference.
Yeah.
It's only just noon here. If we started an hour later, I might have cracked a beer.
Actually, thanks for reminding me. I'm going to have a beer now with a friend.
See? Rub it in.
Okay, Derek, it was very great to hear you. Let's do that
again,
hopefully soon and hopefully regularly.
Yeah, thank you so much, Horst. I'll talk soon.
Some final words from you to our audience? How to host Derek?
Well, one final word. I think I love part of what Horst has been doing with International Open Magazine is republishing some articles that are even several years old but still valid. So often we think publishing is now. But there are all these incredible articles out there, and maybe there are even incredible audio interviews. I want to note someone, a titan in the educational technology world who just passed away last week, Marvin Minsky from MIT, who we should link to his Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
He wrote several books. He was the creator of the Artificial Intelligence Lab at MIT and a big part of building the MIT Media Lab. He's best known for his work in artificial intelligence, but he also developed the original Logo robot and did a lot of work with Seymour Papert in the 60s and 70s and did a ton with music and open source. And I just read in this great book, The Innovators by Walter Isaacson, that he had a huge influence on the development of the first viral video game the game Space War on yeah. the PDP-1.
Yeah, yeah.
Several of his students were major contributors.
I think this was also one of the first real computer games.
Yeah, it's often called the first computer game. Yeah, yeah. It was definitely the first widespread. Mm-hmm. And it was the first open source computer game.
Fascinating. The good old days where everything was open source.
Yeah. So there's a great passage that you mm-hmm. can even find it on Google Books. If you go to Google Books and search for Minsky Innovators.
Okay.
A lot of those articles that he wrote, even in the 60s and 70s, are still really fascinating mm-hmm. reads. So I encourage people to share maybe some of their favorite articles that are likely open source and Creative Commons licensed and get them mm-hmm. out there. I'd like to read them.
I can also add, the only real work I do at International Open Magazine is ask other authors who wrote stuff, please, can I republish that under a Creative Commons share-alike license? This is the basic of what I do. And actually, everybody can do that. And this makes it so much more valuable, because otherwise an article like from this Mitch is gathering dust somewhere on a broken yeah. homepage. And if it's free licensed, everyone can translate it, can adapt it, can put it in their own magazine. So you really add value to things that are already out there but are not honored or are not usable because they are still restricted or with unclearly license.
Well, I want to now say this phrase that I understand is spreading like wildfire through my niece and nephew's school, because I used it when I was teaching a Scratch workshop there. One of the few phrases I know in German, super cool. Take care, man.
Okay, yeah. That was English.
Das Vidania.
Das Vidania. Okay, bye.
Ciao.
Ciao. See you.